Om Shanti. Welcome back. Here on stage, you will see two souls that you know now, and two souls who are old friends, and both who have been very touched by the example that Brahma Baba, this soul, has offered for all of us. And so they're here to share some stories, some insight into the beginning of the Brahma Kumaris and how the beginning continues today. So this is Brother Michael from Australia and Sister Manda from Oxford. So warm welcome to both of them. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti and good morning again. How is Sister Jenti? Did you enjoy her? You're getting the best of the best. In 7 days, you are seeing the preeminent and most experienced teachers of the Brahma Kumaris. And while Manda's getting her mic done, we're going to share with you Brahma Baba's, not history, but his story. And neither of us have met Brahma Baba. And when I first went to the centre in London in 1975, the first thing I saw was a photo of Brahma Baba, just on the wall, very simple house in northwest London. And I asked one of the sisters, I said, "Who is that?" "That is your father." Maybe there is a resemblance. And my thoughts were, not how could it be or no it's not. I thought, that's nice. Because Brother Joe and I, we lost our own father when we were 7 years old. So to come into the BKs and see Brahma Baba as like a father was very nice. And we can share lots of different stories, but Sister Manda has had the very good fortune to live with Daddy Janki for 40 years or something like that.
Nearly.
Yeah, and also very close to Sister Jenti. And who'd met Janki Daddy? And a few of you met. Sister Manda would have heard all the stories, and I was going to invite you, Manda, to share some of what you would like our friends, our guests, our family, not guests anymore, your family, about your inspirations for Brahma Baba.
Thank you, Michael. My story also begins in a similar way. I first learnt about the Brahma Kumaris when I was 19, yes, which was in 1979. That tells you how old I am. And when I first met the Brahma Kumaris, we had an old friend of the family that had come from India. This is back in the UK. And she was a Brahma Kumari. She was a BK. And she was in her early morning meditation. She kept seeing me. So she came to our house and said, "Manda, you must do the meditation course." I said, "No, thank you, Auntie. I don't think so." She came the second time, the same thing. She kept seeing me in her 4 o'clock meditation. She again said, "Do the meditation." And I said, "No, thank you." Because I could never see myself getting up at 4 o'clock or even before 4 o'clock to be able to meditate at 4 o'clock. And get into a white sari. I was 19. I thought, I don't think so. So my mother started the meditation course. And as soon as my mother did the meditation course, she was instant BK. So this Brahma Baba picture came into our house. And I was 19, an eldest in the family, a bit of a strong character. So I said to her, "Why do you have his picture here?" So she said, "Because he's our father," same thing. But I was quite reactive to that. On the one hand, you're saying that God is incorporeal, that He doesn't have a physical image, and then on the other hand, you put this picture of this person. And so that was my reaction to begin with. But I used to go to the center. You know what mums are like. Mums make you do what it is that's good for you, and you don't argue. At least in the Indian families, you don't argue, you just do. So we used to do. And so I used to go to the center and see Brahma Baba's picture. But actually, there was a time, there came a time, various things happened which allowed my mind to become open to Brahma Baba, the teachings of the Brahma Kumaris and the ideas of the Brahma Kumaris. But actually, the first time I had the most incredible experience of Brahma Baba was when I came to Madhuban, which is here. And I don't know, I think you're going this afternoon,
yes, afternoon
to Pandav Bhavan, which is the original complex of the Brahma Kumaris, where Brahma Baba himself came after they all moved from Pakistan to India, and they ended up here in Mount Abu. So it was there that I really had this incredible experience, a living experience of Brahma Baba, and the sense of His presence, the sense of His companionship, the sense of my relationship with Him. So I will address this aspect of this picture of Brahma Baba that's around everywhere. And in the beginning, everybody feels, why is this picture everywhere? Why do they have His photos so many places? But Brahma Baba plays a very, very unique role in the lives of all Brahma Kumaris. Because Brahma Baba became an instrument, a channel, a medium, whatever you might like to call Him, to reveal, in a sense, the understandings that you're hearing about the self as a soul. And in one sense, it's a notion that existed, this idea of the soul has existed. But the absolute clarity and precision with which the understanding comes is not actually available anywhere else. And I'm not sure whether you've actually heard and learned about the understanding of the soul comprising of the faculties of the mind, the intellect, the personality, how the interplay happens between soul and matter. All of this clarity of information came through Brahma Baba, not from Brahma Baba. Because He Himself was a devout Hindu. So His understanding was the understanding of Hinduism. And what you're learning here is actually quite different to the understanding of Hinduism. The notion of the deities, the divine beings, the worship of the deities, you can see it doesn't exist here. Because fundamentally we learned that actually that deity form is our form. It's not some gods and goddesses that you just worship, but actually through your spiritual endeavor you aspire to become those divine beings in a time where there is nature, matter, elements are pure, the soul is pure, and so this manifestation is of absolute beauty and truth and joy. So this understanding of time that I was relating to you, which was really very essential yesterday, because you need more time. And to speak about it in a group of 150 people on a big platform like this is very different than actually sitting with you, going through the concepts and notions with you with clarity. But all of this came through Brahma Baba. He wasn't knowing of this. But even more important than that, what people experienced in those days through Brahma Baba was the presence of the divine, the presence of God. Brahma Baba himself never professed himself to be anything but just an ordinary human being. He considered himself to be that. He considered himself to be on a spiritual journey. He considered himself to be an instrument. But what happened in those early days was people came in front of him and they got lost in the experiences of visions, in experiences of a time warp, if you like. They began to see those deity forms that I'm talking about themselves as that. They experienced the presence of God to the point that as if they transcended their own physical body, their place and time that they were in that moment, and found themselves in another spiritual dimension. And this went on for quite some time for many people. But eventually, Brahma Baba really took it on upon himself to bring together a group of people who wanted to be with him and teach them, learn with them, be available to be an instrument with them and for them for some of these teachings. So he played an integral part in many of these people. I'm referring to them as people instead of just souls, because they were people with background and understandings and karma, if you like.
And just on that point, you'll see behind you photos of the original, we call them the ancestor souls, and they were the original generation of, because the what you know as the BKs now, as Sister Manda was alluding to, was very different. There was no knowledge. It was in the late 1930s. The establishment of the Brahma Kumaris was parallel to the final stages of the movement of the independence of India from Britain, and the establishment of Pakistan, the Muslim country of Pakistan. And they would the organization, because Brahma Baba was a jeweler. He was a very successful jeweler based in Calcutta, which was then the seat of power of British India. And he had he was very renowned. We met some of his customers who referred to Dada Lekraj, which was his name, his birth name, as to be able to tell them of jewels, especially diamonds. So he was immensely wealthy, and he had went through a period of his devotion. He was, as Amanda said, he was a devout Hindu, a lifelong vegetarian, and had many gurus, and he and his uncles were famous for their philanthropy, and he went through a process, and as many similar enlightened people, he was receiving visions, and he felt a motivation to continue his life away from business, and he established what became known as Om Mandali, the house where they chanted Om, because all these people, mostly women and young and their children, would come, because the Sindhi community, as it was called then, were India's most renowned business community, and they dealt outside India. They were world traders, immensely wealthy people, and while these men were out of India, their wives and kids became attached to the Om Mandali. And right in the middle, near just under the as a image of Shiv Baba, to the left there is Mama, and she was 17 years of age, and she was the first administrative head of Om Mandali, and then the Brahma Kumaris as they evolved. But it was a process. People would come and chant Om and see Krishna go dancing in heaven. And in Hinduism, you have to search for stretch to get a vision like this. But the Om Mandali were renowned to, you go to the Om Mandali, you'll receive visions. so that a lot of people were coming, and then eventually a community was formed of about 300 or so,
three or 400.
And this 14-year period that Sister Genty referred to was in Karachi. They were all supported by Brahma Baba's money. He renounced all his wealth and set up a committee of mothers and young sisters and handed his wealth over to them, and he never touched a penny for the rest of his life. He just focused on becoming this medium. So that, just in the context, especially the parallel history of the independence of India, and then eventually in the 1950, they moved from Karachi to independent India and came to Mount Abu.
So it was during that time, before the establishment of Om Mandli, when everything was quite informal, that people started to have visions through Brahma Baba. But also throughout those 14 years, they would experience this incredible presence, and they would experience that through Brahma Baba's eyes. Two things. One was that presence, but the other thing, Brahma Baba's love and commitment to God was so profound that they experienced his eyes to be like a portal. Even today, I know for myself, if I want to truly meditate and experience the presence of the divine, or truly connect and transcend this physical domain, then I actually need a point of light, which is the image that we consider to be the image of God. I don't need a point of light to remind me of what God is. But sitting in front of the picture of Brahma Baba, his eyes just transport me somewhere else, because I feel like the presence of the divine in him was such that even today it plays that role. The pictures that Michael is referring to at the back, but the ones that you see here, Dadi Prakashmani, who was the first administrative head with Didi after Brahma Baba passed away. We met them. I met them. Yeah. I met Dadi Janki for nearly 40 years. These two, Didi I met only for about 3 years after I started. And then Dadi Prakashmani I met for about 25 years every time I came. And you could really feel now when they're here, we realize their power, their presence, what they brought to us in terms of not just the wisdom of spirituality, but the power of spirituality. So why Brahma Baba's picture is there, that I think, I vouch for everybody, every BK experiences Brahma Baba to play that role, as if his eyes are a portal. I mean, I know this picture is kind of plasticky, but if you see his photographs, his eyes are really like two jewels shining at the on his face. And they really take you and transport you somewhere else. And so that's one thing. But Brahma Baba never claimed himself to be a guru. He claimed himself to be our student, a student like us. He claimed himself to be our brother. And he claimed himself to be, if anything, a father. Just think about it for a moment. If a powerful energy becomes present in you, how much you have to be out of the way for others to experience that energy. If for a minute second even, Brahma Baba had the slightest bit of ego about himself, then none of this would happen. None of what you see and experience today would be possible. Because that ego, the poison of ego, would kill everything. So Brahma Baba's presence, even to, when Brahma Baba passed away in 1969, everybody thought, that's it. It's the end of the Brahma Kumaris. It was Prajapita Brahma, who was a powerful source, who was a powerful instrument, and now there won't be left anything. But whilst Brahma Baba's presence, he taught us to connect directly with Shiv Baba. When you hear the word Baba, we're not referring to just Brahma Baba as Baba. We're referring to Shiv Baba, God the incorporeal as Baba. Because Baba means father, to allow that feeling of intimacy with God the incorporeal. That sense of claiming a right, if you like. So Brahma Baba, even today, plays that incredible role, an important role, and yes, he is for us the father figure here on the physical plane. God, the incorporeal, is beyond, is not here, and we connect through our own heart and mind. But Brahma Baba played that role of a father figure that made us have this experience, makes us even today have the feeling that I have a right, and it's possible for me to claim an inheritance of divine qualities, an inheritance of power, an inheritance of wisdom too. But the other thing I think that's also very important is to recognize that even today, he's here. Makes us feel as if Brahma Baba's presence is guiding us. Shiv Baba and Brahma Baba, in actual fact, after Brahma Baba passed away, came, used to become present through a trans medium, whom we call Dadi Gulzar. She played the role of being a trans medium where further, not necessarily the original teaching, but the detail, the practice of the teachings was revealed and explained through Dadi Gulzar. So that stopped some years ago when Dadi Gulzar became quite elderly and could no longer play that role. And 2 years ago, she too passed on. So that role doesn't happen anymore. But we also recognize that even that is some sort of a support, that now all of us need to learn to have a direct relationship with God without the physical support. But another very important role we were speaking about yesterday was that Brahma Baba plays this role of bridging this gap. There is, you've learned about the soul world, the incorporeal region, the region of light, and here is a physical plane, two completely opposite ends of the spectrum. And what happens now at the confluence age is that these two worlds have to come together, which actually ultimately creates the world of purity, the world of truth, and we also call it the world of heaven here on this plane. This spirituality being played, being enacted on the physical plane, where we also learn this relationship with the world of matter.
And with the magic of technology these days, you can see what Sister Manda was just referring to through the medium of Dadi Gulzar, the soul of Shiv Baba, the soul of Brahma Baba would come, because it's their organization. And you can see this on YouTube. You do some Google stuff, some of you may already see it. And when we first started coming, we'd have very intimate meetings in Pandababan because there was only one complex. And we'd have chit-chats. Very interesting. And I won't begin to try to explain the difference in the vibration when these souls came to meet us, because they were our parents, spiritual parents. And when you see the growth of the BKs, first, there are now, I believe, 2 or 3 million BKs, something. No, I don't think actually anyone knows more than that, maybe. And there are many, many, many people who feel that they're like you, because we're not here to make you BKs. Some few people were asking that the other day about, are you converting me to BKs? I have trouble with my own spiritual life, I can promise you, without taking on yours. And that's the integrity and foundation of peace of mind, which is why it's been going for 26 years. And it's to share the love, share the tools and equip you all to leave here in a few days with stuff to help you grow spiritually, personally, all that sort of stuff. And your friends next year. Because these peace of minds, they won't go on forever. As Sister Janti was, some stuff, tough stuff on the world. But there's also some beauty, and this is one of them. But the feeling of Brahma Baba, because we're again lucky enough to, we've met his son, we met his grandson, we met his daughter, two daughters actually, and so we had, you know, what was this guy really like? What was Brahma Baba like? And people all say the same. They felt he was on our level, he was one of us. He wasn't this guru, wasn't this enlightened. He was very enlightened because he made a lot of efforts himself. But he always made you feel that you could do it. You could achieve the highest spiritual experience. And my experience of nearly 50 years with the BKs, 50 years, goodness gracious, hasn't diminished. If anything, it's grown more and more and more. And I see your faces. You know, a week ago we were total strangers, now we're family. You're all in whites mostly. People in the kitchen said to me the other year, after the shopping day, which we instituted as the first absolutely important part of the program, Brother Michael, we have a problem. I'm like, oh, God, what's happened? He said, all the guests are in white. I said, yes. He said, we can't tell the BKs from the guests. I said, great. Box ticked. So, there you go.
But I think it is important also to recognize, and those of you who may have met one of the dadis, Brahma Baba really left his legacy with them.
And legacy is a great description.
Yeah, yes. He left his legacy with the dadis. And as I said already, that when they were here, we didn't recognize it, but we see the contrast from the time when they were here to the time that they're not here now. Mm. It's immeasurable. The difference is immeasurable. But the dadis really also revealed to us this incredible power of spirituality, this incredible ability to love, the ability to accept, the ability to embrace everyone and everything with zero impartiality, no partiality at all. And when people from abroad started to come, and of course India being India, and in those days, this would have been in the 70s when you all started to come, I wasn't around in those days, but I understood that the dadis gave you the feeling as if they know you. There is recognition of having met before. And this in itself was their sharing of love and the way in which they live spirituality. Today we remember with a lot of love and a lot of fondness, because they're the examples that Brahma Baba left behind. It wasn't as if there was only one Brahma Baba and no one else, and that nobody can match what he did. But all of these dadis, all those pictures behind, particularly the ones that we had exposure to, showed us what it really means to be soul conscious. Not just soul conscious in meditation, soul conscious in our practice, in living. I remember coming to Madhuban for the first time and asking, what is this soul consciousness? Everybody's saying it's a point of light at the center of the forehead, but I'm not experiencing anything. What does it mean? And I remember entering the gates of Pandav Bhavan, meeting everyone, and experiencing so much the presence of love, acceptance, peace, as if I've known all of these people before, and that there is no difference. Then I realized that that is what true soul consciousness is, where it's being lived, and it's not just being talked about as a theory, as a concept, but it's being lived. And they all learned it from the daddies. And we continue to learn it from the daddies. But I have to say, I put hand on my heart, that we still feel like we were nowhere near where they were when they have been. And that we aspire to be in that way too.
We can tell you lots more stories, and I've got to make sure I don't use our talk. We haven't got that much time left. Do you mind if we ask if anyone would like to ask?
No, absolutely.
Would anyone like to ask anything? Please don't feel that you get right here in the front. Ask anything, because you can play on social media and you get the good, the bad and the ugly about everything from, you know, Brahma Baba and the BKs and Om Mandalay and all sorts of stuff. But the truth is what's in front of you now. So,
Philip, behind you, there's a hand up.
Okay. Philip, just a... Okay. We'll come back to you in a second.
I would like to ask, who wrote the Murlis, and if you talked about them a bit, please.
So, Murli, literally translated, means flute. So we get together in the morning, as you know. And this is something that happens every single day, anywhere around the world where there is a BK center, there will be Murli being read. When Brahma Baba was there, Brahma Baba, that was the time when he specifically played the role of a teacher, where he played the role of an instrument, a medium if you like, when teachings came through him specifically at that time. So Murlis are the basis of the teachings of the Brahma Kumaris. The teachings that came through Shiv Baba, from Shiv Baba through Brahma Baba. And Murlis are what we study every single day. So that basically simply answers that question. But what we find is that as we listen to the Murli, read the Murli, and emphasis really is on listening to the Murli together, collectively, in an atmosphere, in company, so that there is... the atmosphere always helps in absorbing the understanding and information. Because on the one hand, it sounds like you've heard it all before, but the deeper you go, the more subtle you become, the more the resonance of that Murli and those words and those concepts changes. You've been meeting so many BKs here on the stage, and you've all been hearing about what they're sharing. The basis of what you're hearing is the Murli, is the fundamental understanding of the self, God, the drama, and karma.
And they're all recorded. There was a brother, again, one of the ancestor brothers. His duty was to record each Murli every day. And there's around about 400 of those Murlis that came through Brahma Baba that's what we study. And again, if you go onto YouTube, you can actually hear Brahma Baba's voice speak these Murlis.
So this is not really a question, this is more a statement that I just wanted to say, and I'm sure I speak for others, when Sister Munda, you talked about the daddies, so, and how that presence when the daddies were no longer, and how you felt something was missing, well, certainly for me, I feel you and Sister Janti, I don't want to pick out names, Sister Judy.
Sure.
You are our daddies. So, yeah, it goes on and it shines in you all, and it's so beautiful to experience that. In the dining hall, the people that serve us, you can see that that carries on, and the daddies are there shining through those eyes as we get served our food, and so the daddies are still here.
Thank you, Cindy. I mean, it's a compliment, but oh my, there is no way for a second I would ever consider that for myself. And I think I speak for all the others, Sister Jayanti, Sudesh Didi, Mohini Didi. They would never say that they play the role of the daddies. But yes, we all have to step up and we all have to play the role of supporting our brothers and sisters. So yes, and I speak again that for everyone. All the Brahma Kumaris, BKs feel that we all have to step up. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to say something? Philip's getting his steps up today.
I hope this will be taken in the spirit that is being offered. Really curiosity and a desire to understand. So Brahma Kumari started in a very humble way, almost coincidental. Nobody intended to build a worldwide organization. And we know from the world of matter and drama, so many good causes started humbly. And when they developed big, with a lot of money, resources, real estate, people, politics and greed and power started to really become more and more present and really corrupted the original germ of goodness that was there. How is Brahma Kumaris overcoming that? This is a very big organization. It's global. It has big centers, a lot of resources, a lot of people. How are you not falling in that trap? Mm-hmm.
Great question. Michael, do you want to answer it first?
One specific. The word Brahma Kumaris means daughters of Brahma. And my experience, when I first came across the BKs in London, one other brother, Charlie, you'll meet later, he's our old buddy, and Joe and he were friends before, about a year before the BKs in Europe and London. And Charlie started talking about enlightened women. And I was brought up a Roman Catholic, so I was used to the nuns in charge. When the nuns said, do something, you did it. And so when Charlie started talking about, he was going to Sister Jayanti's lectures, and I thought, what do you mean enlightened women? And when I met especially Daddy Jayanti, and my observation over the decades is the fact that most of the organisations that you're referring to in India are run by men. And this is the largest spiritual organisation in the world run by the sisters. And that has made all the difference that I've observed, because we've seen, Ryan, we've seen all sorts of Hare Krishnas and schisms happen across spiritual. You know, they start off with good intentions, but they don't end up that way. BKs have got a policy that a woman's all judge, and there's around 16 sisters were getting old and passing away. These powerful sisters run the organisation from a spiritual perspective. And there are brothers, of course, doing things, but they refer to one of my mentors was a brother, Ramesh, and he and his wife were, he had an accounting, he was an accountant. This guy ducks in law and accounting, and you know how many people in India are lawyers and accountants. So he was very helpful to me and many other Westerners cross over the barriers between not just East and West, but into the BK culture. And he told us a few things about how being possible, how the BKs have not just existed in India but grown. I mean, there was a, you know, we've had people from who were communists before they came here, and they leave as believers of God because they say God only knows how the BKs actually operate in a country where it's quite difficult to do things, but how they do it is really Baba's inspiration, the guidance of Brahma Baba, and the wisdom of the daddies navigating this difficult things about corruption, about, there haven't been schisms, there haven't been, you know, that I've observed anyway, And when you the downstairs, like we call it down, Shantivan, you may or may not have seen where the India solar facility is in the what they call Shantivan. And Sister Jenti, Sister Manda, and Sister Sudesh and Sister Shivani, they've all come up. There's what's called a global summit of a big event, 4-day event. There are 25,000 people there. And there is the President of India is the chief guest editor. She's a BK. And 40 years ago, 30 years ago, it was inconceivable that the BKs would be as well connected because of the women. And because we don't read the scriptures, we don't have gurus, it was a challenge, cultural challenge, that the BKs, only the sisters with God's love, could they overcome. But this is my experience, and Manda may wish to elaborate.
Yes, the other aspect that is present in everyone's minds and heart is that they're here because of God. Whatever it is that anybody does here, there's absolute and total commitment and faith that we're here for God because of God. And so that doesn't mean to say people's personalities don't get in the way always. Clashes happen, conflicts happen, difference of opinions happen. And the only reason why we can transcend those, bypass those, and focus on what is needed to be done is because everyone has this complete awareness, I love God, this is God's task. The task of God is to bring about peace in the world, to bring about the world of harmony, and we want to give our finger of cooperation to allow that to happen. I'm not kidding. The degree to which people have honored that and have a commitment to that is beyond measure. This is the only reason, one of the reasons, main reason, as well as some of the things that Brother Michael has mentioned, allows this work to happen. People contribute with their mind, their body, their wealth, their time, knowing that this is what it's for. You know, anywhere you go in the Brahma Kumaris, in the world, to whatever extent you are recipients of being offered, nobody ever asks you for anything. Nobody will say, this is how much it is. Not in the beginning, not in the middle, and not in the end. Contributions come completely voluntarily when people take benefit. Secondly, an important aspect is that all the people that you see here working, whether it's here in operating the cameras or music, the lights, the food, the serving, everyone is a volunteer. There is no paid workers. Because again, Brahma Baba felt that spirituality is not something that you can attach a price tag to. Whether you are receiving or you are contributing towards it. Why can you not attach a price tag to it? Because it is priceless. The moment you give monetary value to something, limit its value. Because what 1,000 might mean to one person means nothing to someone else. You limit the value of spirituality according to the extent to which somebody values money. But the experience of love that you have here, can you attach a price tag to it and then decide, this is what I'm going to give for my experience? No. But also the understanding that whatever it is that you're contributing, whether it's through actions, whether it's through your good wishes, whether it's through your money, you are using what you have in a worthwhile way. You are using it to bring benefit to other people. So it becomes priceless. These are some of the principles with which Brahma Baba established the systems, if you like. They're not laws, that you have to do this or you don't have to do this. But we actually do have a term that we use, Shrimat. Instructions for a spiritual life. Instructions that are called elevated directions. And those elevated directions come through the Murali. And the Murali every BK listens to and takes note of and endeavors to live their life by that.
A few years ago, on the money side, because you see, you know, you can, this is a pretty impressive organization, buildings and people, and we had some guests from New York, and they were very high-powered management consultants, and after about 3 days, this fellow came up to me and said, "Excuse me, Mike, what's the catch?" And I said, "What do you mean, what's the catch?" He said, "Well, you know, what's the money?" And I said, "What do you mean, what's it?" He said, "Well, how much does it cost? No one's asked me, no one's hit me for money yet, but I'm sure it's going to happen." I said, "Has anyone asked you for money?" No, I'm just anticipating it. And I said, "Just over here, there's Bubba's box." Every centre of every BK place in the Bubba's box. And people, as Manda said, that get benefit, make a donation, whether it's a rupee or more than that. And this guy had a headache. He went to the dispensary. He couldn't believe that something that was so extraordinarily well structured and the dedication of all these, no one makes any money. We're not going to ask. And Brahma Baba would say, "Father couldn't take money from his children. How could God take money from you?" And I was talking like this to this guy, and he and his friends were, they did something very nice, but he couldn't believe. He said that they've been to every ashram in the world almost, and they've never had an experience like that here. And you give what you can, and you see in the kitchen people who prepare your meals, most of them can't speak English, but they work 24/7 so that you and me can have this experience of what it's like to experience God's love.
But something else that I would like to add is that, you know, there is this notion that if you are living a spiritual life, you have to live a life of renunciation, in that you shouldn't have all the things, or you shouldn't have comfort, you have to live with only bare necessities and so on. Whereas what Brahma Baba taught was that it is that you need, you can have. You can have the comforts. If you can afford them, have what you need and what makes you feel easy. The key here is that whatever you have, it shouldn't own you. What tends to happen is that whatever it is that people own in their lives, it starts to own them instead of you owning that. So here, well, we were laughing yesterday when we were talking about this, that, okay, your beds are not probably the most comfortable that you might like to have, but they are, as you could have them here in India. They prefer hard beds for one reason or another, and I suspect some of you find your beds to be quite hard. But you have a bed, you have a pillow, you have a space that you can call your own. It's not that you have to sleep on the floor and use a brick as a pillow because you are on a spiritual journey and you have to give everything up. He never encouraged that. And you have people from all levels of life here. Those who are quite simple and poor, if you like, but it's not that they're going hungry. They have enough for themselves. And then there are those who have a lot more than that. But the recognition of lives, days of renunciation, to build a relationship with everything instead of it becoming that which defines us.
Got any more? Got about another 5 minutes before we have to finish up. And
Om Shanti, thank you. Okay, I've just got three quick ones. We've got 8 billion people in the world right now, so I just wanted to know how many souls are with the Supreme, and how many more souls, because it seems like it keeps increasing from the beginning. So I don't know whether the mulis provide those answers. And then who are the first souls created? Like from the Christian background and the Islamic background, we come from Adam and Eve, and they give us a whole story. So what's the story of the BK creation? And then the extension, like you know how the pop is always chosen, how they wait for the smoke to come out. So Brahma Kumari centers are all over the world right now. So is it all the three women that lead, you have the three together? I'm just wondering, now that you're spread all over the world, what's the criteria? Will we one day have an African leader, a Chinese leader, an Israeli leader, or will it always be Asian? Thank you.
Do you want to answer?
Thanks, Sister
Great
Amanda.
Great questions, and we could be here talking about them for a very long time.
Till the end of time. Well, I'll attempt to. I'm not sure whether I picked up all your themes, but a lot of the historical stuff about... it's interesting you say someone was talking about there's 8 billion souls on the planet, or thereabouts, and the biggest problem is loneliness. You know, what's wrong with that? Certainly there are souls that have, you know, numbers. You know, there's the first souls and the last souls. Some souls that have been here for a long time and old souls. And Adam and Eve and all this. A lot of the questions, the sort of questions you're asking, can be answered yourself. But you really would need to study a bit more of the BK philosophy, because what you're getting in this 7 days is the essence. We haven't even scratched the surface. So you can imagine how deep. So, and I've been doing this for 50 years. So some of those answers, I could share some of them or attempt to share them, but perhaps we could share over lunch, because they're quite the deepest questions we've had for some time. Would you like to add any?
Yes. As you've been learning, that the soul is eternal. It always exists. That means all souls always exist. And yes, as Michael is mentioning, there are some souls that are already here. Once a soul comes on the physical plane, it continues to play its role. And then there are new souls coming from the soul world. And there comes a time when all of us will return home together. And then we will come down again. The detail of that I think you can learn about later. This aspect of who becomes the leaders, at the moment there are not one or two, three leaders as such, because as Michael mentioned, we have a management committee that runs the organization. Those who rise, if you like, are the ones who are naturally and automatically displaying their spiritual stature, if you like. And nobody puts anybody forward. Everybody, in a sense, recognizes this soul, this person has the ability to take us on a journey, on a deeper journey, on a higher journey. So that's how they come, rise to the place that they rise to. There is no applications made for the job, and nobody's looking at the applications, and it's not about bringing someone up because they're from a certain background, whether it's a Chinese or Israeli or African or whatever. And yes, if we continue to be here for another 100 or 200 years, who knows, that might happen. Although we're not quite sure whether we will be here for another 100 or 200 years. So that's how it really happens. It happens organically. When the Dadis were here, they never said, okay, after I go, it's you. Or after you go, it's you. It's never like that. It's who's the next spiritual giant that comes to the fore. That's how it happens organically. Is that okay? Anyone else? There's one person there.
Yeah, this might have to be the last one, if that's okay, because we'll have some meditation and head to lunch.
My question is simple. Now I understand that I am a peaceful soul in a young body, but my experience here, somehow I'm not able to connect to the God yet, but my experience here, I can feel love, acceptance, and purity. So from you that have many, many experience, could you advise to the young body like me, how can I continue to this path?
Beautiful question, and totally understand that it's possible for you to experience yourself as that, but that the notion of God is a little bit alien at the moment. But I, my own sense, I had resistance, not necessarily the notion of God, but the notion of God in the way that it was being expressed in the beginning. But I think that the more you continue to experience soul consciousness and the original qualities of the soul, your mind and your heart automatically begins to become open, and you're able to experience the presence of God naturally and automatically, because it's an, you know, when the soul, when you're soul conscious, you move beyond the pull of gravity. The pull of gravity happens because our consciousness is engrossed in the density of the physical. Think for a moment, when you experience soul consciousness, what are the qualities you experience? You experience peace and joy that automatically keep you moving, keep you shifting things. Nothing holds you. Nothing holds you down. And it's as if you have elated feelings. And those elated feelings are not just elated feelings of here, but they're spiritual feelings. Feeling of joy, feeling of peace, feeling of love. These are spiritual qualities. And as you continue to experience those, you will become ready, if you like, to experience the presence of God. There have been people who've come here and said, no, God's not in my radar, I'm not going there. And they come back and say, yes, I get it. I know I now have a relationship with God, because it is the one relationship that has traveled through time with us. All other physical relationships, they haven't traveled with us. They are here today. When I move on, they move on. Who knows? I think about this a lot these days. My father's quite elderly, 93, and I go to visit him quite regularly. And I kind of become aware of the intensity of that connection, but I'm also aware that when he goes, it will be like he's no longer here. What now? So it's a natural progression, I feel, to experience God through soul consciousness.
And if I could just say one other thing, my experience personally is that when you come to peace of mind, and you have to, you know, sooner or later it'll dawn on you, you've got to go back to where you came from to come here. The best thing really to ensure that you have a long life of happiness and spirituality is good company. People through the BK centres and the network now is that you'll meet people that will help take your life forward, and you'll use your own common sense, your own wisdom that you've all got, because you came here in the first place voluntarily, is hang out with people like that. Again, not necessarily to become BKs, but all the centres throughout, certainly the Western world, are well networked with people who are into wellness, into mindfulness, into vegan, vegetarian lifestyles, people that avoid alcohol and tobacco, all those common sense stuff. It's people, hang out with people like that, and they will take you forward for sure, and your own wisdom. So that's it. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. Tomorrow, I feel like maybe some of the questions are starting to percolate in you now. And tomorrow we're going to have a question-answer session with Brother Charlie. So I'm going to place papers here and pens here. So if in your further reflections another question comes up, Just write it on here, and our brother from stage will get us a basket. And you can leave them, and we'll answer tomorrow, okay? Because probably many unanswered things. Thank you.
So this song that you're about to hear now, it's a very special song. It was a song written by Mama, who was, as Michael explained, the first one afterwards to come at the age of 16, 17, and she was someone who came instantly recognized who Brahma Baba was and what was happening through him. And she instantly took on this role, if you like, of nurturing and sustaining everyone spiritually, but also recognize her future role of a goddess, a deity. It's a beautiful song. Enjoy.
They say that the people here are magic. They say that the people here have magic in their eyes. Look into their eyes and you'll see a brand new world shining in the distance. They say that the people here are magic. They say that the people here have magic in their hearts. Look into their hearts and you'll see the light of love shining. There's a word that the reminds you of some distant time ago, a time many years ago when magic was the way, a way of life.
Describe such joy.